The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, as the presidential race goes down to the wire, every vote counts, and there are lots of celebrity ads for Harris, including Julia Roberts, Harrison Ford, and now Will Ferrell.
This election is going to be one of the closest in history. Your vote will make the difference. That means you, Gary. Oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm just one person. No. Shut the f*** up, Gary. Last time, only a few thousand votes kept Trump out of office. And this time, we will hold you personally responsible, Gary.
So that's just the latest in the celebrity endorsements of the Harris campaign. Kieran Cuddy is with the Hard Shoulder in New York, and he's going to tell us now what's on the menu for today. Kieran, good morning.
Morning, Pat. We're going to be heading up pretty soon to a polling centre just around the corner, actually, to speak to voters as they cast their votes or having cast their votes to find out exactly who they have voted for and why. I mean, New York as a city, as a state, is blue. It's an interesting one. It's the down ballot races. People who kind of pay real close attention to this in the States and in Ireland. It's one of the cities and states that might determine the outcome of Congress, because there's quite a few kind of battleground congressional seats. So that's kind of one for the real political nerds to be looking out for. But look, we're going to be talking to people here, like I say, about how they have voted. We're going to have some kind of political correspondents and other experts with us in our studio, our makeshift studio here in New York, kind of offering insight as details emerge. Josh Crosby and Barry White, obviously, we'll be going to in Florida and in California, and we'll have a kind of a whistle-stop tour at various stages of the seven kind of swing states that will determine this election. And then listen, as a break from kind of electioneering for the day, we're going to have a lot of that tomorrow as results emerge. Alan Dershowitz, we're going to be chatting to, the well-known attorney here. He's represented the likes of, as you know, Mike Tyson, O.J. Simpson, Jeffrey Epstein, all of these guys. And Colin McCann, the author, New York is his home. He's going to be dropping by as well.
Very good. Looking forward to that, Kieran. Thank you very much. Well, now we're joined by Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with the journal.ie. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you're going to help us penetrate the way the count will unfold, at what stages the different areas of the country will close their polls, and how quickly we might get interesting results. Because if they're red states predictably or blue states predictably, you know, that's only going to, if you like, give us the baseline for each candidate, but it's the swing states that count.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. But, you know, look, we're going to have some states that are, you know, where the polls close early, places like Kentucky, Indiana, Virginia. Of the battlegrounds, Georgia is actually the one that closes the earliest. But this is the thing, Pat, we should be able to extrapolate some things from, you know, the margins, even in states that are reliably red or blue, and also the exit polling. Now, all of this, of course, is complicated by the fact that so many Americans have voted early. And in most states where they vote early, they count those ballots last. But in terms of exit polling, what I'd be looking for is inflation and immigration are very high priority issues for Americans. The polls show that over and over again. How high they are up versus where democracy and abortion are, if there's a significant distance between immigration and inflation versus democracy and abortion, then I think that augurs very well for Donald Trump. If the gap between them is narrower, then you'd have to say that probably augurs well for Harris. Now, again, a lot of this is guesswork, but it's educated guesswork.
Mm. Now, much was made over the weekend and yesterday of the Iowa poll, which suggested that Harris had a lead in a state where when Trump was versus Biden, Trump was leading by 15 points. When Harris entered the fray, that fell to a 5-point lead for Trump. And now we're looking at a 4-point lead for Harris in that poll. It may not be the way that the whole thing turns out. No one really is expecting Iowa to go blue, but at the same time, it's telling us something.
Yeah, and this is my general sense of the race right now, Pat, which is that I believe that the momentum for a whole host of reasons is currently with Harris and Walz. Whether it's going to be enough to get them across the line, I think is an open question. But the Iowa poll is fascinating. And again, it should be stated, first thing is, I always tell people, don't ever make too much of one single poll. But it is conducted by one of the best pollsters in the business. So that would seem to mitigate against this being a total outlier. Now, I still don't think that she can win the state of Iowa. But if there is anything to that poll when it comes to, for instance, individual demographics, and particularly women and the way women seem to be breaking, according to that poll, for Harris, then you would have to say that looks very, very favorable to her. And, you know, taking into account the Midwest, my own guess is that if there's even a kernel of truth to that poll, then I suspect she will narrowly shade the states of Michigan and Wisconsin. And if Trump can win the Sun Belt battleground states, places like Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia, which the poll aggregates suggest anyway, that he has a narrow but steady lead, then we could see a scenario where this thing all comes down to Pennsylvania. And we don't know it will break that way, but Pennsylvania is potentially very important to this campaign. I think that's evidenced by the fact that both candidates were there yesterday.
And of course, the gaffe in Madison Square Garden about Puerto Rico might impact on the result in Pennsylvania, where there are hundreds of thousands of Puerto Ricans.
Yeah, you know, look, after this election, just like after any election, there will be loads of pundits, myself perhaps included, attributing the result to one event or one misstep or whatever. And I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's true. I think it's a cumulative effect. But I will say that event in Madison Square Garden, I think, was a real terrible, unforced error from the Trump campaign. And yes, it has the capacity to move some Latinos in Pennsylvania and beyond, which would be a disaster because Trump is relying upon them. But I also think it could move, for instance, the cohort of white suburban women who are really important for Trump. He needs a majority of them to win this election. And they would look at that sort of unbridled racism and misogyny and say, we don't want this. And I think some of it might come down to, and this is my sense of the momentum, not a particularly ideological read of things, but a feeling that is growing that, look, that evidenced the worst of Trump. And do we really want the circus sideshow for another 4 years?
I mean, there's something utterly distasteful about some of his commentary, not just in the last week, but particularly so in the last week, but even before. You know, is this the kind of man you'd want to break bread with? The answer is probably no, absolutely not.
Yeah, and that is absolutely true, and that is going to motivate, I think, a lot of people to vote for Harris Walz. On the other side, though, Pat, and this is why I wouldn't dare to call this thing, for an awful lot of Americans, it's going to come down to a transactional approach to voting. And when Trump is at his best, he is asking that question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And for the majority of Americans, the answer to that question is no. And some of them, it's down to the inflation and the cost of living. For some of them, it is down to what they perceive to be the overrunning of the southern border into the United States. Trump has significant advantages on those issues. And the question is whether the buzz, whether the vibe that I'm sensing, whether that momentum will be enough to counter not just the advantage he has on immigration and inflation, but also the inbuilt advantage conferred on him by the Electoral College system. And also what I think the Trump campaign and Republicans more broadly have done well is to paint Harris as too far left for middle America.
Now, I remember in 2020, Trump firmly believed he had it in the bag. And then he started to squeal how unfair it was when suddenly his lead evaporated as they counted the early voters. I mean, the same is likely to happen, except that if he's got an early lead, some commentators are suggesting he'll declare that he's won just to lay the groundwork for protest.
He could do that. But one thing just to note, and this is really important, Last time around, Trump was saying almost that early voting was un-American. Don't go out and vote early. This time around, the numbers suggest that Republicans, an awful lot of Republicans, have voted early, and that his numbers are significantly better than they were last time around. Now, what that might tell us about how things will turn out ultimately, I'm not so sure. But I think the early voting is going to be better, almost certainly, for Trump than it was last time. It is also interesting to note that Trump's daughter has said that in the seven battleground states, there are more than 500 lawyers already mobilized to embark upon court, you know, court challenges and litigation and recounts and all those sorts of things. And if this election is that close, then that's the road that we're heading down to, where this could be not days or hours, where this could be weeks before it's decided. And as you advert to, the potential, sadly, for civil unrest becomes very real.
And what we need, Larry, is a two-state solution for America. Now, the question of the House election, where the House is up for grabs, and the Senate, where some of the seats are up for grabs, it could be quite a while before we get a result in the House, although predictably the Senate will be a much quicker result.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think, you know, just about everyone at this stage believes that, barring something totally unforeseen, that Republicans will take control of the Senate. And that's because one of the seats that's being vacated is by conservative Democrat Joe Manchin. That is all but certain to go to the Republican in West Virginia. It also looks like John Tester, the incumbent Democrat in Montana, is in serious trouble and could well lose his seat. So it's likely to me that Republicans will take the Senate by a very narrow margin, barring, you know, again, this idea that Harris has an advantage we don't see and she has significant coattails. The House, I think, is infinitely more complicated because in that small number of districts that remain competitive, because most districts have been gerrymandered to such extent that they're controlled by Democrats or Republicans, and the only battle really is in the primary, there are a number of seats there, as Kieran adverted to a minute ago, in New York and in other places. So I think what happens at the top of the ticket may play a significant role in that, and Democrats will be hoping that this momentum that they perceive to be behind Harris and Walz will be enough to win them the control of the House of Representatives back. But I wouldn't bet on it. I think the House is going to be extremely close.
Is it possible that in the presidential electoral college situation you have a tie?
It is, yeah, it is. And if there were a tie, if it was 269 to 269, with 270 being the magic number, if that were to happen, then it would go to the House of Representatives in terms of the presidency, and each state would have a vote. So the combined total of the number of Congress people would vote, and that would dictate the outcome. Republicans would have the advantage in that instance. And if that were to unfold, Trump would, in all likelihood, be the president. On the flip side, and this is where things get really interesting, you know, we're really into the realm of the strange and odd, I suppose, you know, architecture of American elections, is that the Senate, on the flip side, would have the say when it comes to the vice president. And because Democrats have control of the Senate, then you could see a Democratic vice president. So, again, that's not entirely out of the realm of possibility, but it shows, I suppose, some of the antiquities of American, the American Constitution and American democracy.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.